On this edition of Jazz Profiles, it's a tribute to the legendary reed man, James Moody. This encore broadcast was originally produced in 1997.
This classic interpretation of I'm in the Mood for Love is virtually synonymous with the artist who created it. He is a virtuoso musician, known for his work on alto, tenor, and soprano saxophones, and on flute. He is a man who radiates love. When you meet him, he'll hold you tight, kiss you on both cheeks as if you are old friends. His sound is a reflection of that warm personality. It is romantic, witty, and earthy. He is unmistakably Moody. I'm Nancy Wilson. On this edition of Jazz Profiles, the many sides of multi-instrumentalist James Moody. As an artist, James Moody is constantly recreating himself. His style is always fresh and personal.
When Charlie Parker came on the scene, I think he turned everyone around and he created another language within jazz, and I think Moody had picked up on that like a lot of other people, but he translated it in his own way. He was always distinctive.
Writer Ira Gittler.
The saxophone is a very vocal instrument to begin with, but he really gets these little cries and very vocal inflections into his playing. They're very unique to him.
Jazz historian, Dr. David Baker.
The individual voice, it is so distinctive. You hear one note, two notes, and people like Moody, Clark Terry, J.J. Johnson, Coltrane, Sonny Rollins, the major figures, Dizzy, Miles. One note, two notes, and it is so distinctively them that you can't miss it. And with Moody, it becomes even more phenomenal because it doesn't really make any difference which instrument he's playing. He picks up the flute, two notes, Moody.
James Moody's roots go back to the southern coastal town of Savannah, Georgia, where he was born March 26, 1925. During the Depression, his family, like thousands of others, migrated north. The Moodys settled just across the bridge from Manhattan in Newark, New Jersey. James grew up in a home filled with music.
I loved it. I couldn't wait for Saturday morning for Martin Block on WNEW to have the make-believe ballroom come on. That hour they would play jazz music. So you would hear like Jimmy Dorsey, Tommy Dorsey, Charlie Barnett, Count Basie, Chick Webb, Jimmy Lunkford.
When Moody listened to those old radio shows, he always imagined that he'd grow up as a musician. He loved the saxophone, and he used to press his face against the window of a neighborhood music store, dreaming about owning one someday.
This music store was there, and I used to look at the saxophones every day. I just look at them, you know. And when I first got my first saxophone, I put it in bed by me and went to sleep with it, man. And just looking at it, boy.
His uncle bought him a secondhand alto sax when James was 16. But he didn't get serious about playing until he was drafted into the military. He was stationed at a segregated Air Force base in North Carolina during World War II.
The German prisoners of war would come into town in Greensboro, North Carolina, jump off the trucks and go into restaurants and eat. And I couldn't go in there and eat. And the German prisoners of war was doing KPs for three quarters of the base, but the one quarter, which was Negro, they wouldn't let them do it for us. We had to do our own work. You know, no matter what it was, even the enemy was better received than we were, you know. and we were supposed to be American.
Moody and the other officers channeled their frustration into music.
They needed a band, a marching band, because they already had an official Air Force band, which was Caucasian. So they wanted a Negro one. So they asked everyone who had a horn to send for it. So I sent for my horn, and then we formed a band, and we would play like they call it reveille. We'd wake people up, you know, and at night we'd play Retreat, and the flag would come down a bit. But all this was on the Negro part of the bass.
One night, when Dizzy Gillespie's band performed in Greensboro, Moody and the other musicians went out to hear them. Their discharge date was coming up, and Gillespie encouraged them to try out for his new band. When James Moody auditioned a few months later, he didn't make it. Dizzy's arranger, Walter Fuller, said Moody didn't play loud enough.
So about 3 months later, I got a telegram from Dave Burns, my buddy, who we were in the Air Force together. And he said, "You start with us tonight." And that was at the Spotlight Club on 52nd Street in New York. Thelonious Monk was the piano player. Kenny Clu Clark was the drummer. Milt Jackson, viva harp, and Ray Brown bassist. Yeah, it was a good school. But like I ought to say, is I'm glad I didn't know too much, because like I didn't realize where I was. And I'm glad of that. Because if I would have, you know.
Dizzy Gillespie gave James Moody his first real job when Moody was just 21 years old. It gave Moody a chance to learn more about his instrument. After he'd been with Dizzy's band for a few months, James Moody recorded his first solo, a Gillespie composition called Immanon, which is No Name spelled backwards.
Yeah, I remembered it, because I wasn't supposed to take the solo. The baritone player was supposed to take it, and he didn't show up or something. And the solo was... something like that.
Jazz historian Ira Gittler.
I heard Moody before I met him. First I heard him on record, then I heard him in person on 52nd Street in the summer of 1947 when Dizzy was playing at the Downbeat Club. He was a very ebullient character, you know, just full of energy and like a good feeling in his playing and in his persona.
Moody remembers touring the South with the band in the late 40s.
When I saw some more prejudice, I saw that, saw how we played for dancers with a rope in between. One side was for Negro, one for, a lot of stuff like that in some places. And then other places, like they had a Negro dance and it would be down there and the white spectators, the Caucasian spectators. And then the next night it would be a Caucasian dance, but no Negro spectators though.
Moody stayed with the Gillespie Band for 2 years. It was the beginning of a close personal, professional, and influential relationship that spanned 40 years.
Whenever someone says, "What did he teach you?" Like it's like saying, "What did your mother teach you?" You see, what did your father teach you? I mean, as you go through life, whatever it was, it goes, you know, through with you. Like he told me about everything was on the keyboard at the piano and learn the piano. Everything was there. He told me to leave out some notes and then play them the next time. Many, many things he told me.
Writer Ira Gittler.
Working with Diz gave Moody a forum, a chance to grow, playing with a master musician such as Diz, not only learning musically, but learning about stagecraft, because Dizzy was the consummate raconteur, comedian. It was all part of his persona. And I think Moody learned from him in this regard, too.
James Moody was in his early 20s when he decided to leave the Gillespie Band in 1948. He recorded an album for Dizzy's arranger, Walter Fuller, and after that, feeling tired and troubled, Moody left for Europe for what was supposed to have been a 2-week visit.
I had been drinking, you know, a little something, and I'd taken an overdose of Benzedrine. So my uncle said, just send him over here for a couple of weeks. And I went for a couple of weeks, stayed 3 years. Yeah, I liked it. I just said, well, wait a minute, I can go anywhere I want to go. Why do I want to go back to that? You know, go back to all the prejudice.
Moody's extended vacation led to one of the most important moments of his career. Perhaps it was simply a matter of being in the right place at the right time. James Moody told the story for NPR's Billy Taylor's Jazz at the Kennedy Center in 1995.
I was living in Paris. I was down at the club Saint-Germain, and I was down there jamming one night, playing. And this gentleman from Sweden by the name of Anders Berman, he was the drummer, he came in, he said, would you like to make some records? The first in Sweden, we like to cut 12 sides. I said, sure. Mm-hmm. He says, okay, I'll send you a plane ticket. You know, I said, I don't want to fly. I don't fly. Don't send me. I said, send me a train ticket. He says, okay, we'll send you a train. So I went on a train and went to Stockholm and stayed there for a week and recorded like Pennies from Heaven, Body and Soul, you know, Cherokee. And we finished 11 sides. Mm-hmm. And they said, we need one more side. I said, what would you like to do? I said, well, how about I'm in the Mood for Love? So there was this beat-up alto saxophone that Lars Gullin, the baritone, sweetest saxophone he had. So he had it. I said, mind if I borrow that? In those days, I mean, you could, like, play another horn. It wasn't, but now, you know. So he said, sure, go ahead. So Guster Caselius, the arranger, he went into the John, and while he was there, he sketched out the harmony for Mood for Love.
Uh-huh.
He came back, and we did it in one take.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Just write on down.
Yeah. Now, the reason it went, boo bee bee doo doo dee doo doo dee dee doo doo dee, people said, you must have been inspired. Well, here's what it was. I was used to playing it on tenor, and when they said bang and hit that first chord, and I started playing, I said, do do dee do do dee do do dee dee. I was trying to feel my way out, and so that's what that was. I'm telling you the truth.
Mood for Love was a big hit on both sides of the Atlantic. Vocalist Eddie Jefferson wrote lyrics to James Moody's freely improvised solo. A version recorded by King Pleasure climbed to the top of the charts in 1952.
There I go, there I go, there I go, there I go. Pretty baby, you are the soul who snaps my control. Such a funny thing, but every time you're near me, I never can behave. You give me a smile and then I'm wrapped up in your magic. There's music all around me, crazy music, music that keeps calling me so very close to you, turns me your slave. Come and do with me any little thing you want to, anything, baby, just let me get next to you. Am I insane or do I really see heaven in your eyes? Bright as stars that shine up above you in the clear blue skies. How I worry about you, just can't live my life without you. Baby, come here, don't have no fear. Oh, is there wonder why I'm really feeling in the mood for love? So tell me why I stop to think about this weather, my dear. This little dream might fade away. There I go a-talking out of my head again. Oh, baby, won't you come and put our two hearts together? That would make me strong and brave. Ooh, when we are one, I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid. If there's a cloud up above us, go on and let it rain. I'm sure our love together will endure a hurricane. Oh, my baby, won't you please let me love you? Give me relief from this awful misery.
What is all this talk about loving me, my
David Baker?
while people have adopted pretty much Moody's Mood for Love, very often they'll stop to think that virtually everything Moody plays could be turned into a vocal piece because it is so lyrical and so musical. Now, some of the things he is capable of playing and does play, no singer in the world could sing.
Oh, baby, you make me feel so good. Let me take you by the hand. Come, let us visit out there in that new promised land. Maybe there we can find a good place to use a loving state of mind. I'm so tired of being without and never knowing what love's about. Ernie Freeman, you can come on in, man, and you can blow now if you want to. We're through.
James Moody's popular improvisation created hit records for dozens of musicians who've recorded it, from Aretha Franklin to Van Morrison. The tune put Moody on the map here in the United States. Decades later, his fans still expect to hear Moody's Mood at every concert.
Like, no matter how much I practice, if I don't say, there I go, or play, you know, do 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 do, then it's like I haven't been there. But it doesn't make me feel like, oh, I don't want to be doing this. But I mean, I love doing it. And it's been very good to me, that solo. I'm honored and privileged, I believe, you know, to be able to do it.
I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is NPR's Jazz Profiles, with a tribute to multi-instrumentalist James Moody. James Moody's newfound success lured him back to the United States in 1952. He toured with a small ensemble, performing Moody's Mood and other popular tunes. Ira Gittler.
You know, playing with a small group, he was able to expand his solos more than in a big band. In a big band, particularly when you were recording, in those days, you only the whole record was about 3 minutes long, so sometimes you only got 16 bars, sometimes a chorus, and rarely more than one chorus. But in a small band, you had more of, especially as a leader, you had more of an opportunity to stretch out.
I was looking for a singer because Bab Gonzalez had left. And I was in Cleveland. Eddie Jefferson was in Cleveland working because he was a dancer. So he came by and tried to sing the Moody's Mood for Love thing for me, and I needed that song to be sung. So I gave him the gig. So then later on, I found out that he wrote the lyrics, you see. And then he worked with me, so I would say, okay, he'd sing that one song, and then he wouldn't have anything else to do. I said, I tell you what, you get one of those clickers. I got a clicker, and you go at the stand at the door, and I'll make you the manager. And you click and see how many people are in, because you get paid in percentages sometimes, and there'd be like 500 people in there, and they'd tell you there was 150, you know. So anyway, I made Eddie the manager. And so he would, you know, do that. He'd sing his song and then go back and do the clicking and come back. And then he started doing some other songs. He told me he had some things, so I had arrangements made for him, and he did those.
Boy, he blowed, he said, good news, I'm back in New York. It makes me very happy, I'm so very, very happy just to be back in the city. I loved Joe Paris, it was crazy, but my mind got kind of hazy for the ones I wanted to be with. Hanging on having this found right here in the city. I first picked up my horn and I got a cab and went straight down to Birdland. The first one that I met there was Charlie. He was standing at the bar with Diz. Having a little taste, they had time to waste. The rhythm section hadn't come in. But Pop took a seat, started into playing on the piano, and everybody said, he's putting in such a groove feeling, and I know it. He really laid me out. Ray Brown and Shadow were keeping the rhythm, and they sounded like Birdie. And one of the tenders started swinging. Somebody screamed, Jay Moody has really got the blow now. Moody went and picked up his horn. Nobody made a sound. That's when the bird looked around and said, go ahead and blow it, swing it, Moody. You got the feeling that I had when I was young and
renegade. Tell the folks just what you got to say. Then the house started to rock, and when the yard set up, he took a couple choruses, he wigged me. He was blowing, blowing, blowing away, and it sounded mighty pretty. You never know the feeling I had when deep down inside, of course, the mess you were there. It was a Saturday night, I'll never forget, cause I was feeling real good. Mood blunt, shot show, is it going, going, going way to the top of the sky? They're really shouting, there can be no doubt about it. They will leave you in a groove. Dig, everybody, mood is blowing the blues.
During the mid-50s, Moody reached a high point in his career. He made some recordings for the Prestige record label, and his ensemble played to audiences in packed nightclubs across the country.
I love to hear Moody play the blues. He grew up in the blues. You can't grow up around Dizzy and not be in the blues. And his playing is just so genuine and honest. There's no, what you hear is what you get. With Moody, there's no tinsel.
Moody's Mood for Blues, one of several recordings he made for the Prestige label during the mid-50s. Always striving to improve his artistry, Moody started teaching himself to play flute as well. 3 or 4 months later, he recorded Flute and the Blues. Gittler.
What came out was so personal and so marvelous, and by classical flute standards, the sound was not a legit sound, but it was a great sound for jazz. And it was another reflection, another facet of his artistry. I always enjoyed his flute playing. He's my favorite jazz flute player still to this day.
People who went out to see Moody during the 50s or listened to his records always said he was a rising star. But he lacked widespread recognition in the music business.
In the 50s, Moody with his little band was undervalued, I think. He was not appreciated for how good he was. Ralph Gleason out in San Francisco was the only major critic really to write glowingly of him.
Moody suffered some personal setbacks. When the Blue Note Club in Philadelphia burned down one night, Moody lost all of his instruments and sheet music. He started drinking more heavily around this time, and eventually, his addiction to alcohol got out of hand.
Well, people kept telling me how great I was, and I was saying, great, I don't know anything, you know. So I drank to kind of cover that up, and all that did was make matters worse.
When he grew tired of dealing with his addiction on his own, Moody decided to check himself into a New York State hospital for treatment. In those days, if you didn't have money, the state mental institutions were the only option. So he stayed at a place called Overbrook for 6 months, drying out, searching inside himself for answers and direction, and working on some new tunes without the help of a bottle. When Moody felt stronger, he talked to friends at Argo Records in Chicago about doing some recordings. Dave Usher was hired to produce the date, and he decided to meet Moody in person. Usher and drummer J.C. Hurd visited Moody at Overbrook.
And I remember very well Jay and I walking into this very large room, sort of like you might have seen in the movie One Over the Cuckoo Nest, or you know, where a lot of people who had problems were all congregated together and going through their various situations, you know, talking to themselves and so forth. And here was Moody sitting there and his face beaming when he saw us with his manuscript rolled up in his hand.
On Labor Day weekend in 1958, shortly after checking himself out of the hospital, Moody headed to Chicago to record an album that many say symbolizes his personal triumph over addiction. He called it Last Train from Overbrook.
Gotten instruments for him. He had no instruments at the time. He really was starting out again for himself and for those that he loved. And away he went. Johnny Pate had written the arrangements, and it was a couple days and did extremely well. Where he goofed on the flute, and it was so cute that we said, hey, we're going to use this in the LP.
Moody and his friends talk about his life after the stay at Overbrook, when he deepened his commitment to his personal and artistic growth. I'm Nancy Wilson. You're listening to a tribute to James Moody on Jazz Profiles from NPR, National Public Radio. By the early 60s, James Moody was back to work full-time with his friend and mentor, Dizzy Gillespie. He toured the world with the Gillespie Band and made several recordings, including Something Old, Something New. It features classic tunes from their early bebop days. ¶¶ Greg Hitler.
You know, in many ways, he was so far ahead that the younger musicians had to catch up to him, because his sense of harmony, really extended the width of the harmonies long before a lot of other people were doing it. You know, he'll play unusual parts of the chords, and yet he never loses touch with that soulfulness, the earthiness.
David Baker.
His playing has evolved. It's always discernibly moody, but as it's evolved from, like, basically bebop through bebop, and then all of the things that have happened since then, the use of force and pentatonics, the kinds of things that we associate with, say, Woody Shaw, or with John Coltrane.
And then in the wake of John Coltrane, who popularized the soprano in the modern era, everybody started picking up on the soprano sax, and Moody was one of them. But like on his other horns, he plays it so well, and the soprano is a very hard horn to play in tune. And he does it.
In the late 1960s, Moody made a personal decision to stop touring and settle down so that he could help raise his daughter. He took a job at the Flamingo Hilton in Las Vegas, playing with a show band. Now, this was not the time or place for jazz improvisation, but his ability to play several instruments came in handy. Moody backed up performers like Elvis Presley, Liberace, The Osmonds, Ike and Tina Turner, Liza Minnelli, Leslie Uggams, and Milton Berle.
What it was for me was a heck of a lesson, because, like, when I was in Dizzy's band, we'd play something, and if it was, like, things to come, we would say, and we'd get it down, and then we'd take it up and play it. In Las Vegas, they play it just like it's supposed to. It's gone. That's it. And you got to play it, you know. In Vegas, whatever it is, whatever the pop song of the day is, you can rest assured that when the artist, whoever's coming in to headline for the week or 2 weeks, they'll be doing that song. You know, like Dom Bom Bee, dee 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 dee, that song close to you. I mean, whatever the year was and whatever the pop song was, I mean, they just, you played it to death.
During his stay in Las Vegas, Moody was criticized by fellow musicians and fans who thought he had sold out. But as his friend, trombonist Slide Hampton, points out, Moody never completely turned his back on jazz.
He had been in Vegas for a long time, and he was a little afraid
that when he came out that he might have lost some ground as far as what people might expect of him. And when he came out, he was playing more saxophone than he played before, and he knew that. He wasn't afraid at all because he'd been really working, taking that opportunity in Vegas to work on what he was going to present when he came out.
Even in Las Vegas, James Moody was forging ahead, pushing himself to new heights on his instruments. Dr. David Baker.
Moody is the absolute picture of why some guys are so spectacular. He's so inquisitive. He wants to know everything about everything. And Moody says, man, I don't have any pride when it comes time to asking somebody if I hear something that I want to know about, I ask him.
Many times that we worked together that he'd come to me after that and say, show me what you just played. I want to learn that. I'm going to practice it. I'm going to use that as a part of my practice exercises, you know.
But on the other side, he's always willing to show you what he did if you ask him.
Trumpeter and band leader John Faddis.
I've also seen him take young students and say, here, practice this. And what happens if you do it this way? And giving them a different way of thinking about music.
Although he's received high praise and accolades from around the world, James Moody says if he could do one thing differently, he would have pursued formal training. A bit ironic, isn't it? This regret coming from a man who has spent his life pushing himself to learn.
See, because when you learn by yourself, you call yourself teaching yourself, all you're doing is you're going around in circles for a while there, you know? And it takes a longer time because there are people that have only been playing for 6 or 7 years that can play their buns off. You know, and there are people that have been playing 50 years and they don't play that well because they haven't really studied. You know, you need to study. And then when you study, you need to study forever.
After he left Las Vegas, James Moody went back on the road, performing jazz. He lived and worked in New York City for a while, and then spent a few years in Canada. He also worked with Dizzy Gillespie's band again. They toured Europe, Asia, and Africa. He'd been on the road for almost 10 years in 1988, when he had a gig at the Catalina Club in Los Angeles that changed his life.
I came to Catalina, and I met my honey.
Moody met his wife, Linda, that weekend.
2 weeks later, man, I was in love, and I didn't intend for that. And 3 months later, I was married.
It was sort of love at first sight.
Linda Moody.
I just remember thinking that he was wonderful, fabulous, just somebody very, very special. And then we were married April 3rd, which was, it was a Monday afternoon, and that was the only time that Moody and Dizzy could be together at the same time in the same part of the world.
In 1995, Moody celebrated his 70th birthday. Linda and his friends threw a surprise party for him in New York City.
Moody played the Blue Note the week of his 70th birthday, and his birthday was actually the closing night, Sunday night. So when we drove up in the limo, he looked out, and there was Ed Bradley waiting in line to get in, and there was Chuck Mangione and Flora Purim, and just lots and lots of his friends, and he's saying, what is going on here?
David Baker.
And Moody was genuinely surprised. He didn't suspect a thing. When he walked in there and saw Sonny Rollins and Lorraine Gillespie, Jimmy Heath.
Well, that was one of the great love-ins of all time, and the place was packed. All number of musicians were there, and it was just a great evening.
James Moody, 70 years old, ladies and gentlemen. door, because he may never come this way again.
Bill Cosby was the master of ceremonies.
I really don't know what to say except to say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
This is your birthday. You're 70 years old. When Moody and I were working together in Las Vegas, Moody was in the band, the Hilton Orchestra, 20 years ago, and I'm 57. Moody is 70 now. So 20 years ago, Moody came down my dressing room, and he came in and he said, Bill, he said, I'm 50 years old today, man. I said, well, happy birthday, Moody. He said, you know what? I don't feel 50. So I said, well, Moody, when were you 50 before? So Moody said, oh, yeah, that's right. Well, today you're 70.
I don't feel.
You don't feel?
70.
Ira Gittler.
And he rose to the occasion with his playing because it really, reflected his feelings. Not that he doesn't give, 100% of himself all the time when he's performing, but this was, you could feel the joy.
So Moody has this wonderful sense of puns, double entendres, the timing of delivery of a line. Moody will start something and then time it so that it catches you by surprise, and then there you are. He does it when he's singing. He does it when he's talking on the microphone. It's just a kind of, I'm thankful to be alive kind of attitude.
A long time ago, a second lieutenant named Speed. He returned to the States after staying overseas 3 years. His wife said, welcome home, dear, but since you've been gone, you see, we've been blessed with a darling baby. and the cute little one is here. She took the baby in her arms and said, Benny is his name, boo boo wee boy. He said, darling, I've been gone away 3 years. Please, can't you explain? They were English. So I won't seem so dumb, yeah, you be. Tell me where that little bastard, tell me, where did little Benny come from? Oh, hey, hey, oh, hey, oh, wee. And every time he'd ask, she'd say, Benny's from heaven. His face got red. Still she said, Benny's from heaven. He went and asked the neighbors who lived all around, but no one could remember Benny coming down. He said, now, about a little thing like this, I ordinarily would bother, but from what I know of children, they've got to have a father. And as I look at Benny, I can plainly see Benny must be from heaven, cause he damn sure ain't from me. Cool man.
Benny's from heaven. That is one of my favorites of Moody. And he still sings that with, you know, with that Italian bravura and the catches himself. You know, his timing. He really could have been a stand-up comedian because his timing is just impeccable, man.
I always thought that one's private life was more connected than people like to think to their music, because I always believed that music is a reflection of who we are inside. And if you're not happy, or you're depressed, or something like that, that's going to come out in the music in some way, and not necessarily a negative way, but it's going to come out. And I think Moody's music reflects the joy that he has in his life, in his relationship with Linda.
And Moody's love for jazz is reflected in his relationships with fellow musicians. Trombonist Slide Hampton.
Moody is a person that has a lot of love to give. He needs people to give it to all the time. Besides, he's giving us plenty all the time. He's kissing all of us all the time, you know.
I only have one complaint about James Moody.
John Faddis.
Moody loves to give everybody a hug and a kiss on both cheeks. But sometimes if you catch him too early, he'll have just put on his cologne and it rubs off on you, and you'll go around with Moody's fragrance on you all day. I would avoid putting on any fragrance in the morning because I knew I was going to see Moody and get my hug and kisses. And then I would have Moody's fragrance on so I could save money that way.
James Moody, young at heart, is constantly exploring new territory, experimenting with new sounds, and constantly evolving as an artist.
Like, if I'm the same tomorrow that was today, I'm losing. And anyone else is. You should grow in some kind of way every day. And I'm going to grow. Because with my growing, I'm giving you better things. I don't give you what I think you want. I give you what I think is my best.
Fairy tales can come true, it can happen to you. If you're young at heart, doo-dee-bee-bee-dee-bo-do-doo-dee-bee-bee. For it's hard, you will find, to be narrow of mind. If you're young at heart, bee-dee-bee-dee-bo-do-dee-bee-bee-bee-dee-bee-dee-bee-dee-bee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-d
You can laugh when your dreams fall apart at the seams, and life gets more exciting with each passing day. And love is either in your heart or on its way. Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth to be young at heart. Doodle dee be dee be dee be doo. For as rich as you are, it's much better by far to be young at heart. Doodle dee be dee 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 dee. And if you should survive to 105, look at all you'll derive out of being alive. And here's the best part, you have a head start if you are among the very young at heart.
Our tribute to James Moody was written and produced by Injamile Carol Jones, post-production engineer Soraya Muhammad. Special thanks to the staff of Fresh Air with Terry Gross. Thanks also to NPR's New York and Los Angeles bureaus, WDET in Detroit, Festival Productions, and Andy Lancet. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens, assistant producer Madeline Smith. The executive producers for Jazz Profiles are Mary Beth Kirshner and Maury Horwitz. To email us, or for more information about this and other programs in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson.
Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth to be young at heart? For as rich as you are, it's much better by far to be young at heart. And if you should survive to 105, look at all you'll derive out of being alive. And here's the best part, you have a head start if you are among the very young at heart. Boop, boop, dee, 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 doo, 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 dee, bee, bee, ba, da, ba, da, 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 ba, ba, wee.
This is NPR National Public Radio.
You've been listening to an encore broadcast of Jazz Profiles. This tribute to James Moody was originally produced in 1997.